Hi, everyone. This is Zach from Dance Music Sex Romance, and I'm here with another attendee of the University of Salford Purple Rain Conference. Her name is Leah McDaniel, but if you were at the conference, you may know her as Leah Stone, because she registered for the conference before she changed her name in marriage. So I'm calling her Leah McDaniel now, but we can also call her Leah Stone. So first of all, hi, Leah.
Hi.
I'm glad to have you here.
I know. That's so funny. That's the first time I've been professionally introduced that way. So.
And it wasn't very professional.
No, it was awesome. So.
Let's jump into it. I mean, I've got your name, but I don't know that much about your academic background. So let's talk a little bit about that, what your area of study is in general, and then we can kind of talk about how that connects to Prince, because I'm guessing you're not a full-time Prince scholar.
No, that's actually, it's kind of funny. So, I mean, of course, I would love to be a full-time Prince scholar. I mean, who would not love to do that with their life? And I have to say, this conference has been amazing, because it's such a great outlet for that part of my life, which I realize is a little bit bigger part of my life than I thought it was. But so academically, I am actually I have a business background. So I am an MBA, and I know I'm like all over the place, but I am an MBA, and I actually do brand marketing. It's kind of more of my quote unquote day job, but I've also been doing some business journalism for about the last 6 years, and branching that out more into the academic side of things. So it's a little bit more of a transition for me, as far as getting into like the true scholarly portion of Prince. And I have to admit, I mean, as I submitted for the conference, I was a little intimidated to think, you know, like, I'm not a professor, I'm not some of the people at the conference just had, you know, amazing, you know, doctoral thesis and right, all these different things. And so I'm not necessarily in that camp, but obviously my, you know, lifelong passion on the subject, and then kind of the transitioning that I've been doing as a part of being a journalist, I felt like was a great way for me to kind of get my feet wet in the academic world.
Yeah, that's great that it worked out that way. I didn't know that you had sort of a non-traditional background, but I've heard from several people that this was a different kind of conference. You know, it wasn't necessarily all people who had PhDs and were currently, you know, scholars, or, you know, it wasn't so much about being tied to a specific institution or having a, you know, like having research in this particular area. So so that's great that we have an example. And even the three people that I've talked to, you know, I talked to Jane Jones first, who's like a hardcore like philosopher. She makes, I don't want to say she makes me feel stupid, but she makes me profoundly profoundly aware of my intellectual shortcomings. And then I talked to the last episode at the time that this comes out will have been with Zach Stigler, who has sort of a similar background to me. He's from a media studies, except he actually completed his PhD.
Okay.
So, you know, I like that I'm getting kind of the whole range. So I'm going to ask you how your business background connects to the paper you gave, if at all. But first, I want to actually go back and talk about your connection with Prince, which I'm guessing predates your, you know, academic and professional experience.
Yes, yes. Oh, definitely. So I always like to tell the story. And since we have time, I'll tell you, I'll give you the long version now. But I jokingly tell the story, and this is actually true. So I always say I fell in love with Prince in the back seat of a car. So when I was roughly close to 4 years old, my parents took me to a drive-in movie, and like, you know, most people, I'm probably dating myself, just the fact that I went to a drive-in movie, but, like most people at that time, you know, the kiddie movie played first, and then your parents kind of put you to sleep and they stayed up and watched the grown-up movie.
Yeah.
But I was never one to really follow the rules like that. So I can vividly remember peeking out from kind of under my blanket in the back seat, and Purple Rain was the feature that evening. And so I instantly was just enamored with this man. I can like vividly remember this, which is really kind of crazy as I think about it. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. But no, so kind of after that moment, I was just obsessed. I just thought, you know, Prince was amazing. Before that, I was a Michael Jackson fan. Michael went out the window. Totally, like, there was no more Michael for me. It was all Prince. And then following that, my dad actually, so I have a couple aunts that are about 10 years older than me. Uh-huh. And so my dad took my aunts to see the Purple Rain tour. And my mom still tells the story to company that I thought I was going to the tour. So I was at this point, I was almost 5 years old. I dressed myself up in my best, I guess, I don't even know what outfit I had on, probably some strawberry shortcake something. And I go downstairs ready to go see Prince. And they inform me that I'm not going. And I literally laid in front of a door and cried for about 3 hours. So that started my love affair with Prince. Well, then, I mean, from there, I've been a fan, like, for lifelong, you know, kind of fan. And, like, I love, like, not really even the fan thing, more of, like, the fam or the family description. Because, I mean, it does feel that way just because when Prince, you know, passed away, I literally feel like I took it way harder than some family members. Some of the people at the conference, I think that was, and I won't jump ahead to the conference, but I will say one of the things I think that was so great about the conference is that I felt like I had finally found my tribe. I mean, everybody there embraced kind of the same thoughts, sentiment, feelings that I had about Prince for all of those years. And so throughout, you know, kind of my teen years and then even into adulthood, I was a huge fan of his music. And I would say it was probably like my early 20s where I really got more interested in the man behind the music. So between I was probably a little earlier than that. I really started getting more interested when he went through the symbol controversy and the separation from Warner Brothers and that conflict. And unfortunately, I mean, that was before the internet was obviously as big as it is now, so we didn't have all the access to everything that you have today. So it was like watching, you know, MTV news for updates,
right,
things of that,
right.
Or, you know, trying to get on dial-up AOL.
Yeah.
but basically, I mean, I would say that's where I kind of started to say, like, who is this person? Because it's so much bigger than the music. And while his music is obviously prolific, it was just this man and kind of the spirit that he had and just the forethought that he had. So to kind of tie the business piece to Prince, one of the things that I was really interested in was that he was really on the forefront of the way that the music industry honestly has shifted. And I think a lot of people don't give him enough credit for really being one of the pioneers of the, you know, kind of pay-to-play internet music model that we have today. I think true fans do. I mean, I think true fans definitely know that, and there are people that know, but in general, I would say the music industry, I don't think gives him that credit. At least not to the level that he deserves. So from a business standpoint, I just started to find it very interesting how he, you know, worked to distribute his own music, build his own websites, kind of like dabbling in this whole idea of how do you get the record company out and truly become an independent artist. And I just always found that really interesting. And so that was where I kind of started delving into Prince topics. As far as my actual topic at the conference, it really came from just a question. So I have a lot of friends that are also, you know, very much we consider ourselves Prince, you know, fans, and we have tons of different discussions. And one of the things that always kind of recurring theme, I should say, that comes up is just this whole idea of Prince and, is he a feminist? Is he a misogynist? Is he like some independent being? You know, what is Prince?
Is he beyond our judgment?
Exactly. Is he beyond our judgment? Exactly. Like, you know, so and that's one of the things that continually came up. And so I just started doing just a little bit of, you know, research and looking into different aspects on that topic. And then when it came time for the conference, it was one of the things that I thought would be really interesting to talk about, because in looking at the content for the conference, I wasn't sure how people were going to push the boundaries. I knew there would be a ton of topics around Prince's music and his activism and all those different pieces of his personality. And I just, I wasn't sure if anybody would kind of delve into the darker side of Prince. And so that was one of the things that drew me to that topic.
Yeah. Cause there was a lot of, right after he died, I remember there were a lot of, sort of hagiographies, you know, about him, obviously, because when somebody dies, you don't want to immediately start trawling up like problematic things that they said or did. And, you know, I remember several kind of articles floating around talking about like Prince was a really, you know, he was supportive of women in the studio and in his bands and, you know, really kind of making a case for him as a, you know, maybe not specifically making a claim for him as a feminist, but really making a case for him as pro woman. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember talking about it with my sister, who I'm close friends with, and we're both Prince fans and both feminists. She probably, you know, more than me by default, but, you know, so we were talking about that and it was kind of like, yeah, but, you know, like, but at the same time, he was only that supportive to a very specific type of woman, you know, and I felt like that aspect of that conversation was kind of lost in 2016 for understandable reasons. But it's an interesting idea to sort of reopen for discussion now that we've had a little more time to kind of mourn and now we can start, you know, thinking about maybe the less pleasant aspects.
Right. No, I completely agree with that. And I think there's just one of the things that I think is very interesting about his treatment of women in general is if you, as I did a lot of the research for this paper and just kind of honestly went down a ton of rabbit holes. But one of the things that I'll say that really struck me was that he very much used women, not in the sense that I think he was necessarily trying to use them negatively. So I don't want to be misconstrued as saying that, but I do think there was this idea of women being the muses for his work. Mm-hmm. And if you look at his kind of, at least what we know publicly, I clearly, unfortunately never had the opportunity to meet him. But from what we know publicly, you can very clearly link women to the projects that he did and see where they influence those projects and then kind of see where, when those projects were complete, so were those women. And I mean, it's a very like clear timeline on how this happened.
Right. Yeah. And that's so much of the fan discourse is like, that's a Maite song. That's a, you know, that's a Vanity song. Mm-hmm. And there are even, you know, arguments like that. It's such a vexed and like even political issue of like, is the Beautiful Ones about Vanity or Susanna, and where you fall on that line is has so many like you know, racial implications, and
yes,
it really is. I think as with everything, it's like talking about Prince and women, it's about so much more than just this one guy and his music.
So true. So very true.
So I guess before we get into your paper more specifically, and you mentioned you were kind of wondering if you were going to see sort of the darker side at the conference. What did you see at the conference? Did you get a sense that it was mostly celebratory, or did you see papers that were maybe a little more willing to challenge our ideas about Prince?
Was a mix. I mean, I do think that most of the papers were a little more celebratory in general, but I will say that I think the conversations and the discourse that happened at the actual event, people were definitely willing to challenge, you know, kind of our preconceived notions or our, you know, our fantasies or whatever you want to call those things regarding French. And I think that was actually, I think it was actually really refreshing. I mean, I very much enjoyed the fact that there were papers that kind of covered multiple topics. So when you think about it, there were people there that just focused in on his music, even focusing in on specific guitar riffs or certain, you know, chords or things of that nature, which was, I thought, was just really incredible. And then there were, you know, other people that kind of talked more about Prince the man. There was actually a woman there that had been, linked with Paisley Park and with kind of the whole experience for a while. And she talked on a more personal level of kind of having been in the room with him and actually spent time with him, which was,
which was really,
I thought, interesting as well. And then you had other people that talked about him in the context of race and race relations. And I really enjoyed those topics because I do think that's something that gets lost sometimes in conversations about Prince is just around how much activism and racial relations and things of that nature were a big deal to Prince and were such a huge part of his being. And I think it gets glossed over sometimes.
Yeah.
People did not really go too dark. And honestly, even my paper didn't go too dark, I would say.
Right.
But I definitely think that we all were able to have conversations offline that, you know, kind of towed the line of more of the conflicts within the man.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it is like, you know, we mentioned Jane before. She and I did that. We did like a massive, I had to split it up into four episodes because we talked for so long and it is always complicated. And sometimes I think I err on the positive side personally because I think there are, sometimes we politicize things that are character flaws or that are even like emotional struggles. And what I mean by that is, you know, so Prince, maybe not all of his relationships, but several of his relationships were not great. You know, he didn't treat these women great. And so I think the temptation for a lot of people in a situation like that is to look at, you know, a history of like mistreating women and saying, oh, he's a misogynist, you know, but I think he was just kind of generally shitty at dealing with people, which doesn't really necessarily have a gendered inflection in and of itself. You know, if he had been gay, I guarantee that he would have had a lot of like, you know, he would have left a lot of brokenhearted men, you know, in his wake. It wasn't necessarily about, you know, men and women. I think he was just honestly just sort of bad at dealing with people and at connecting with them on that deeper level. So, you know, I think that's one of the kind of challenges of talking about, was he a feminist? Mm-hmm. Because I think these individual issues are easy to politicize.
No, I agree with what you're saying. I mean, I think, you know, not even from a sexual standpoint, but I do think he left a lot of brokenhearted men in his wake. Even
that's
now.
True. Yeah, associates. Yeah,
yeah, because I do genuinely believe what you're saying. I mean, I think one of the things about Prince is that he was at heart an introvert who found a way to be able to be extroverted by using music, which was obviously, you know, his medium. And I think because of that, he did not necessarily have the best, you know, social skills or relations with people. And I mean, you hear people talk about it, and I feel like, again, and not talking to him personally, but I feel like in reading interviews and hearing very similar stories, you just hear that he was this very quirky individual. He was funny. He was, you know, very much could be very much somebody who was like had this magnanimous personality when he wanted to. But when he was done with you, he was kind of done with you. And when it was over, it was over. I mean, I know Maite, you know, everybody kind of has an opinion on her, but but I did read her book, and I think one of the things that struck me in her book that was just a very interesting thing was how she talked about kind of the way that he treated women from the perspective of like, hey, the girl that he brought to Minneapolis was the girl that was on her way in, and that was the girl that was like, you know, going to be the next big thing, and then the girl that he still had a connection with but moved was the girl that was on her way out, and how he just never really, even with other relationships in his life, once he felt like you were on your way out, that was it.
That was really one of the most interesting parts of that book, thinking back, because it's like it's like a motif in the book, because it happens to her.
It does.
Carmen Electra is, you know, he sends Carmen away, you know, to whatever, to her on tour or whatever, and Maite moves in to Paisley or to Minneapolis, and then later on she sees that happen,
Manuela.
You know, when Manuela comes in, and when she goes to Spain, she's like, oh shit, it's happening to me. Like it was really fascinating and you know, sort of chilling. Like it's incredible that, you know, someone who is so kind of like artistically warm and in touch with his emotions could operate so coldly. it's pretty fascinating.
Wendy? Yes, Lisa. Is the water warm enough? Yes, Lisa. Shall we begin? Yes, Lisa.
No, I agree. I mean, and you see it, like, it, you know, obviously it happened to her, but you kind of see it with men as well. So
yeah.
Not necessarily. Again, that's where I think it kind of, like, transcends the sexual piece of it. It really is just the fact that I think he was just a very, almost a closeted person. Like, I think he just had a very difficult time expressing himself outside of anything other than music. And when you weren't necessarily serving that musical purpose, you saw that kind of decline in the relationship with other people.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that comes to my mind first is, you know, I wrote about when Prince's like breakup with his first manager, Owen Husney.
Yeah.
And Owen Husney, like, you know, in multiple interviews and recollections, he describes it literally as a breakup. Like it really was like it was the end of a romantic relationship, you know, they were that close, and then the cutoff was that severe, and just sort of like he was in his life and then he wasn't.
Exactly. No, it's 100% true. I mean, it just is very, I don't know, it is chilling, actually, is a little bit, I think, is the right word, because I think it is, because I feel like there were just pieces of his personality that I wasn't privy to until I was doing a lot of the research and kind of digging through things, and there were things where you're just like, oh my gosh, that was just mean. It was just really, really mean.
That's one of the reasons why I think, you know, to take it back to Purple Rain, why I think that is so, that movie is interesting, is it was a very explicit, like, it was basically a biopic. Like, obviously he fictionalized, you know, a lot of it, like his parentage and the like sort of specifics of the band, you know, inter and intra band dynamics, you know, I mean, obviously a lot of it was kind of like edited for the screen, but in terms of, you know, portraying himself as a psychologically, really, it was pretty spot on. Like it was kind of amazing for somebody who is, you know, sort of notorious for being private. It was, and also for being, you know, for not really wanting to look at his own flaws. It's so interesting to me that he decides to make his big movie debut with, you know, a character that is not a flattering portrayal of him, other than, you know, the romantic image.
Exactly. And I mean, I think it also, that movie brings up a piece of Prince that I talked about and a few other women at the conference that we kind of discussed, which is, I feel like personally as a woman, there's this split that you almost have to have when you love Prince. So,
right.
I mean, because if you are a woman, and I mean this may sound condescending, but like if you have any kind of sense, then you definitely understand that there are pieces of his personality that are just wrong. I mean, using Purple Rain as an example.
Right.
You look at his treatment of, you know, Apollonia in the film, his treatment of the bandmates in the film, his treatment even of his mother, and just how he watched his mother be abused and obviously stood up for her with his father. But I mean, kind of like the way he looked down on his mother because she allowed herself to be abused.
Right.
All of those things are very conflicting and very derogatory when it comes to treatment of women. But then you also have, to your point, this romanticized image of this man and the music and just how it comes to life and just how powerful he came across on the screen. Mm. And you kind of like have almost a little bit of a split between the two, because you can't fully embrace one without the other, but you do, in my opinion, you do have to be able to kind of turn one down to fully embrace the other.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that makes me, so the romantic thing is it's both lowercase r and capital R, because a lot of the time those like, those capital R romantic heroes, like, you know, Wuthering Heights, they're kind of frightening, intense people, you know, who may behave in destructive ways in a relationship, but you know, and then sort of the troubling part of that is that they're still appealing.
Mm-hmm.
when in real life, obviously that would, you know, dating somebody, you know, being in any kind of relationship with somebody like the kid in Purple Rain would obviously be not a great experience. But
no. But I mean, I think we've all had our kid from Purple Rain experience. Of course, when we didn't get songs written about us because of it, but well, some of us might have, but not me. But I do think it is not the best experience, but I think it also mirrors any relationship that you're in. I mean, there's going to be good parts and bad parts of a person's personality, and you're going to be willing to accept someone's flaws. And I think that Prince's, at least from the movie and from what we, you know, at least from what we know about his other relationships, they just seem to be magnified. but also his talent is so magnified that I think a lot of us are willing to overlook it.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, you know, there's all kinds of ways that, like, I'm something of a Purple Rain apologist, but I think the arguments can only take you so far. So, you know, there's an argument to be made that the movie is about him kind of like grappling with toxic masculinity and ultimately overcoming it, which is technically true. But I mean, when you really look at it, I mean, basically he lets Wendy and Lisa play their song and he sings it to Apollonia, and there's no like apology. Just the apotheosis at the end, you know, has he actually changed?
Well, she gets the earring back, so you know that.
I think there's an argument to be made that, oh, you know, well, Purple Rain was sexist, but Prince didn't write it, you know. It was there's also Magnoli, and you know, the director Albert Magnoli, and
yes,
I can't remember, I think Magnoli wrote the final screenplay of Purple Rain. There was another guy attached before that, which I think that holds some water. But then, like, I recently rewatched Graffiti Bridge for like reasons that I couldn't go into that. Like, I couldn't tell you logically why I chose to watch Graffiti Bridge again. But in some ways that movie is even more horrifyingly sexist than Purple Rain, and Prince had complete creative control over that one. So, you know, like, at some point you kind of have to accept that maybe this man's attitudes about women were not 100% as progressive as we'd like them to be.
No, I think you're right. I mean, and William Blinn is actually the other person for Purple Rain, but the other writer. But,
yeah, the fame guy.
Yeah, exactly, which is hilarious. no, but I think the other thing about Graffiti Bridge is, on top of it being, honestly, I think to your point, I think that from a misogynistic standpoint, it's way worse than Purple Rain, at least in my opinion.
Right.
But I also think that it was also not a good film. So, I mean, at least Purple Rain, in my opinion, is a good bad movie. Like, you recognize that it's not a great film. I'll never say that. But I am a huge fan. I mean, Under the Cherry Moon is actually my favorite Prince movie.
Yeah. And that's definitely a good bad movie.
Yeah, but they all kind of fall in that camp. Graffiti Bridge is just a bad movie.
Yeah,
even being a Prince fan, it's just bad.
Yeah, it's sort of like I watch it as, you know, with the same kind of like eyes through the fingers, kind of like watching some kind of horrific car accident. It's a totally different level of enjoyment, if you want to call it that.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's one of those movies where, it's one that I don't rewatch. The other ones I will rewatch. I've seen Graffiti Bridge a couple of times. I don't watch it often. But I do think, to your point around just kind of his treatment of women, and I think that in my paper I discussed as well, like how I personally think a lot of this goes back to his experience with his mother. And I know that mommy issues feel so trite talking about Prince. It really does. But at the end of the day, I don't think that you can really, I don't know that you can discount it. I don't know that you can not, you know, pay attention to the fact that this is a man who did not have a really good relationship with his mother. He has a mother that he is on record as saying that his mother is kind of like the wild side of his personality. And, you know, there are certain pieces of her personality that he kind of scoffs at, and he's done that publicly, or did that publicly. So I don't think you can discount the fact that there is probably something that comes from that relationship that shaped the way that he thought about and acted towards women. Yeah. And she was sort of the original person that he like cut out. You know, I think I talked about this in a previous podcast with Jane. You know, there's so obviously he had this kind of difficult relationship with his father where they would kind of go back and forth and, you know, go from kind of being pals to not talking to each other. Mm-hmm.
But with his mom, it's like she was just an absence.
Yes.
He never talked about her. And you know, people who spent time with him would say, like, if you brought up his mom, it was bad. Like, you know, everybody would avoid that subject.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely think, you know, there's got to be something there.
Right. It's next to impossible that there wasn't. I mean, and like I said, you hate to say that because I guess in my head, you know, Prince is this larger than life figure and this man who just really, you know, transcends those types of things. But, you know, those are the kind of things that shape your personality, especially as a child. And to know there's also that level or that piece of abandonment that I think came from his mom that you never really see addressed anywhere other than the fact that he seemingly wants to leave people before they can leave him.
Yeah.
But you know, his mom with her leaving his dad and then remarrying and him obviously not having a good relationship with his stepfather and then kind of, you know, going back and forth, house to house, relative to relative, all of those things, they have to have a profound effect on someone.
Sometimes, like a bird of a child, alone.
let's talk just briefly about, because I mean, you could probably tell I want to talk about the paper that you wrote, because I keep going back there.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Let's just talk briefly about, so I'm assuming that you were on a gender panel.
Yeah.
Given the topic.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the other panels you saw? What were some of the ones that stuck out to you?
Yeah, there were actually, there were several different ones that I really enjoyed. One of the ones that was, first of all, I love James. And I know you've talked to her, so you've probably talked about it at length. Mm-hmm. But I just really, everything from her topic to her delivery, I just found it really, really intriguing. I mean, there were things that I hadn't necessarily thought of in this whole,
right,
you know, ecstasy idea. I found that really, really fascinating. So I very much enjoyed her panel. Another panel that I saw that I enjoyed was Erica Thompson, and I don't know if you're talking to her.
I need to reach out to her. So if this ends up in the podcast, Erica, I'm going to email you. I think I actually connected to her with her before I decided to do this like series.
Mm-hmm.
She's the spiritual,
yes,
journey,
the
right?
Spiritual, yeah, mission, and that was, yeah. I've always been very much intrigued by this kind of, devil angel image that Prince has.
Oh, yeah.
So this, yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody isn't, you know, the idea of him being a Jehovah's Witness and kind of denouncing everything that he did in the past. And then kind of in his later years, you could see him going back a little closer to where he was in the past. And it was, that whole thing was very much fascinating to me. But I thought Erica did a really great job of bringing it to life with this idea of the spiritual mission of Prince.
Mm-hmm.
And so she also apparently is writing a book, and she gave mm-hmm. us kind of what it felt like were like the highlights or probably the outline of her book, which I really hope that it gets published because it was just intriguing. But she talked to a lot of people that were around in Prince's life. She talked a lot about his spiritual journey and how it took place from his childhood years until almost his passing. Mm-hmm. And it was really, I thought, very fascinating and a different take than I've ever heard before around the spiritual journey. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's really important work that needs to be done, because I think most of the criticism around Prince, mine included, is written by sort of, you know, either out and out like non-believer agnostics or just people with a secular perspective in general. You know, most of the biographies are by people who are very skeptical toward his religious convictions, and then, you know, there are segments of the fan base that understand his religious convictions more because they share them, but aren't really willing or able to sort of take a more critically distanced look at them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there really hasn't been, to me, a satisfying explanation of how does spirituality work into his music. It's, mm-hmm. it's either people who are, you know, very secular sitting there and being like, what is this God stuff? Like,
right.
You know, there's so many, I've read so many books that are just like bewildered why he would recite the Lord's Prayer in the middle of controversy, you know? and then there are kind of just like more just completely uncritical, like, oh, well, you know, he did it all for God, and, you know, that was just a good thing. And I'm just not satisfied by either of those perspectives. And it's such an important part of his body of work that it's kind of crazy that we haven't really kind of dug in and analyzed that. Mm-hmm. Touré did a little bit in his book. He wrote about, you know, this Seventh-day Adventist church and how that influenced kind of the sort of like doomsday aspects of, you know, 1999 and Let's Go Crazy, and then also the similarities with the Jehovah's Witness church, which is also very much about like end times. But I think it deserves a more sustained analysis than what Touré gave it. And
yes.
I think some of the conclusions that he came to, were a little strange. Like he had this idea that Prince was basically using his music in the '80s as like a proselytizing tool, like he was using it as a Trojan horse for the, you know, religious subject matter, which I think is definitely true for something like the Rainbow Children, but I'm not convinced that it's true for, you know, Let's Go Crazy.
No, I would agree. I think, I struggle with the Tory book because one of the things that I did not like about the book was that I felt like he put himself up as the one and only authority on Prince, and I think that left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Yeah.
The tone that he wrote the book with, it was just not, I don't know, it's never been one of my favorite pieces, but... Mm. But I do agree. He was one of the only people that really touched on the religious aspect. And I think that he did it a little bit of a disservice because he did not delve into the conflict. And that's where I think the root of Prince and religion lies, personally.
Right.
There's just this conflicted being. But I think personally I can identify with something like that because as someone who grew up in like more of a religious setting, and one side of my family is extremely religious, the other side of my family is not quite as much. I would say they're more spiritual than religious. Mm-hmm. I can definitely identify with the conflict of wanting to be good and pure and also having a secular influence and kind of seeing that come to life. And I think a lot of that came to life with Prince as well, where there's this idea of wanting to, you know, embrace this very religious mindset, but also having this, and in his case, not in mine, but in his case, having this talent and bringing music to life in a way that he wanted to, you know, wanted to glorify his relationship, his spiritual relationship with God, but also having all these other topics and things that he wanted to bring to life, and kind of you see that conflict play out like time and time and time again. And I personally find it fascinating. And Erica was one of the first people that I really think did a great job of talking to that conflict.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's the classic conflict of, you know, soul music in general, or even back to jazz and the blues, you know, it's like all of this music originated from gospel, but then it became corrupted is how you would put it if you were somebody who thought that it was a sin to play secular music.
They're right.
And that drama plays out in a really interesting way with Prince. And so much of his career, I think it's a tool, I think, that is necessary to understand a lot of the shifts in his artistry. You know, the JW conversion is obviously the sort of most dramatic, but there's also, you know, he starts talking to God on the Purple Rain tour.
Yes.
That definitely feels like a turning point.
I would say yes.
Love Sexy is obviously a huge turning point. I mean, it really is. Like almost every one of his kind of about faces has some kind of connection with his, what he sees as his relationship with God.
Exactly. I mean, I think it's almost like you see it go full circle, which I think is really interesting because I think he like kind of dipped his toe in the water. And then you see when you get into things like the Rainbow Children or the war or things of that nature, you just feel that it becomes much more just pointed and much more obvious that he's really going down this like highly religious path, and almost right. to the point that in some of the later work, it becomes, for lack of a better word, almost like manic. I don't know if that's, that's not the right word. I need Jane to give me a better word, but no. But I mean, it goes down this path of he becomes, it's like a frantic type of thing. It's
yeah.
And I don't know if it's because knowing now, like kind of what we know, I don't know if he was starting to wonder about his own mortality. Did he have premonitions? Did he know things? Was he starting to be, you know, a little more concerned about, you know, what the afterlife looked like? Because obviously that was a thing that ran consistent through his music right. for years as well. But was that starting to become more of a reality? So, you know, it's all those things where I would love to have had the opportunity to have some of those conversations with him personally, because I think that, I mean, I think everybody would, but I love it because I think that there's just this piece, this shift that you see, because it's this full circle from this kind of frantic peace, and then you almost see him start going back into literal peace, so P-E-A-C-E, peace, towards the end of his life. And I think you begin to see that with, like, the piano and a microphone tour, where yeah. he wanted to take music back to its purest form, which is how I feel that he always felt he could be closest to God.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. But that and sex. But obviously
yes, exactly. And which
obviously the sex was a little, he was more troubled by that than with music.
Yes. Yeah. But you know, it's kind of funny though. I mean, because if you look at it, that's not unique to Prince. I mean,
no.
Most orgasms are religious experiences to most people, you know, so it's there's this very fine line between
right.
like religion and sex.
Well, I mean, even ecstasy, there's two contexts that we use the word ecstasy, basically, and it's religious and sexual.
Exactly. Right?
That's pretty much it.
Yep. So true.
So I think, like, let's get, we talked a little bit about your paper, but have we covered it? Like, you want to kind of just lay out your argument?
I can do that. Oh, and really quickly, just one more thing on the conference. I'm sorry. There's one more topic I was going to say that was interesting, and I didn't, I cannot remember the speaker's name. I'm terrible with names, but I can't remember his name. But he did a great piece around Prince and his guitar style. And he related Prince's music back to the blues and really talked about it from a pure guitar chord standpoint. And that one was actually very interesting, too, because it kind of brought up some of the things that you were talking about, how you had this idea of Prince being somewhat blues music, where everybody considers him to be more rock music. And he just, I mean, he brought some things to light around Prince and his, not just the actual format of his music and the sound of it, but also the actual content of the music and how that had more of a blues feel. So that was another interesting, and if anybody can remember the person's name, I'm very sorry that I can't. But that was another,
I think
it was very interesting.
I can't remember it either off the top of my head, but I think Jane talked about that too. So if anybody listening, if you go back to that podcast, And I'll put a link. I'll put a link to the scholar in the notes.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, so basically, as far as my paper, though, specifically, we've talked around it a lot. But, I mean, it really focused in on kind of answering this, you know, age-old question of, was Prince a misogynist or a feminist? And then this idea of his talent and celebrity status helping to overshadow his expectations of morals and then values, kind of the way that we would expect from a personal relationship standpoint.
Right.
And I delved into the what we've kind of talked about around his mother, and where my personal thinking is that that's what started this tumultuous relationship with women, and this kind of abandoned feeling that I feel like he sought to avoid feeling later in life, which is why he could, you know, kind of turn people off and turn them back on quickly. And then I just went through his more noted relationships and how those more public noted relationships kind of displayed, was he a misogynist or a feminist? And one of the things that I really dug into was just around the fact of people that you hear say he was a feminist. It's very interesting because they contradict themselves, even in trying to say these things about him. Susanna Hoffs, I think, was one of the people that, you know, kind of said, like, no, I think he was a feminist, and basically talked about that from the perspective of him helping, you know, her and her group succeed. But then in the very next breath, just talked about how he could just cut you off. So I'm like, I don't know if that really was a great argument, but hey, whatever. I also touched a little bit on like the dark side of his lyrics and how he wrote down some very brutal, you know, really almost outright brutal songs. So obviously from, you know, Bambi, where he kind of touched on sexual violence, you have, you know, Extra Lovable, where we had more of a threatened rape. I did not include, but I did, you know, surface the original Purple Rain script, where he basically rapes Apollonia.
Right.
I wasn't sure about the authenticity. It's one of those things that's kind of circulated around, and I don't know. I didn't really feel comfortable bringing it into the work without knowing that it was authentic.
Right. And then you have the authorship issue that, you know, we were talking about. And I think was that from when William Blinn, was that from his draft?
Yes, exactly. And it was,
I mean, there's definitely like sexual violence in Fame. So that's the only thing I know by him, but there's two movies. So I don't know about sexual violence in Starsky and Hutch.
Exactly. No, but I do think, and like I said, I didn't want to bring that in because I feel kind of similar to what you're saying, where I'm like, I'm not really going to touch this one because I'm not 100% sure how authentic it is or how much he was involved. But I will say, I mean, we definitely have his own lyrics that have these types of themes. And then obviously all of the music that's supposed to be, supposedly, I mean, I don't know if we'll ever find out. We may, with everything being released now. But some of the things that are still in the vault that were entire dark albums that he himself said, like, I can't release this. It's just too much.
Yeah. it's interesting because, you know, he Prince was sort of easily spooked. I get the impression, you know, like everybody obviously knows what the Black Album, you know, he thought it was evil. And yeah, there were some darker moments in there. But I think overall it was quite tame, you know. So I think it must have been an association he had with the context around it, more so than anything that was specifically in the lyrics. You know, so he sometimes it seems like he gets spooked by odd things, but there's definitely, you know, and you mentioned a few of them, there's definitely stuff that I understand why he didn't put it out at the time. And I even I'll fully admit I love Extra Lovable, the original Extra Lovable. I love Lust You Always, which is another song that that has you know, a very troubling lyric about sexual violence. But the more I think about it, I don't know if I want those to be released officially. You know, I think that might be something that, like, maybe we should just keep it for people to seek it out. Like, I don't know if we need to open that can of worms, because he clearly didn't want to, you know, for, like, I have to imagine that was part of the reason why those songs didn't get put out.
Exactly. And I think, I mean, I think it's one of those things where it's fortunate and unfortunate that the way the world is today, we will probably hear a lot more of what was in the vault, whether it be for financial gain or just the fact that people can get their hands on the music, because, and, you know, widely spread it because of the internet. I know that there have been, for years, clearly there have been people that have gotten the bootlegs and all the different things.
Right.
So I don't know how much is still there, but I do think, I do agree. Like, I think I am of the belief that I like to enjoy what he wanted me to hear. And so not to say I've never listened to a bootleg, because I have. And I'm not, you know, not trying to sound holier than thou or anything like that. But I do think one of the things, and I may be contradicting myself a little bit from earlier, but with his passing, one of the things that has been really hard for me is I don't feel comfortable doing things that I feel like he didn't want us to do. I mean, even with the conference, I'm like, would he have wanted us to do this? Would this be, would he have been okay with this? But I mean, but on some level, I can't imagine that he wouldn't have loved like a group of, you know, hundreds of people coming together to talk right. about him and to talk about all these scholarly aspects. I think he would have found it kind of cool. But as far as the vault music, I definitely think there was a reason that some of that stuff got buried, and I don't think we should necessarily hold it against him when he obviously didn't want it to be, you know, fit for public consumption.
Touch me at your own risk. I'm not responsible for anything I do. I lust you madly. Your kiss is all I want. You're all I wanna do. My analyst assured me that you were just a phase, but I just can't stop this hunger. It's been going on for days. I lust you always. I lust you always. You're all I wanna do.
So, okay, so you went through some of the, you know, some of the textual, you know, sort of troubling issues. You went through some of the personal, you know, the things in his personal history. Is there anything else, or, you know, do you want to kind of get to, I'm guessing that there wasn't an absolute
A definitive conclusion. Answer, right. Yeah. That was where it ended. So where I basically ended was that, I mean, honestly, I think he was a little bit of both. And I think that that's what made him so wonderful. That's what led to his creative genius. I think all of these different parts of his personality and all these characteristics are the things that made him who he was and are the reasons that we love him. I mean, I think that, you know, he was a lover of women, you know, physically and mentally, but his artistry reigned supreme. And I ended the paper with a quote from Apollonia, which I actually think sums him up, where she basically said he loves his women, but his music comes first. He's married to his music and no woman can ever compete with that. And I think that that is just the truth. I mean, I think that is where, in my opinion, it comes to life that, you know, women were his muses. They were his muses for his music, because his music was always going to be the most important thing to him. Nothing was ever going to compare to the music.
So, yeah, I mean, the muse thing, does that kind of connected to when you were sort of going through his relationships, you were, I'm guessing, kind of talking about what works each woman might have inspired.
Yes, exactly. So I think that, I mean, I think not, and honestly, not just the works, but even his personal life. So if you if you pay attention, I mean, obviously, well, everybody knows that he was introduced more to being a Jehovah's Witness through Larry Graham, and I think that's kind of gone on record.
Right.
How that's come to life. But I mean, when you think about or look at like a Manuela or people that he felt like, you know, once he was doing something, everybody had to do it. Or if he felt like you could bring him along in his journey, even with Manuela. And the jury's kind of out on this one. But I know some people say like she's one of the reasons that he became bigger in some areas of philanthropy. He was always a philanthropist, but but there were some things that were she was very passionate about that he then became very passionate about. And you start seeing in the time that they were together, like that part of his life becomes much more public in the years that they were together, or even with like Maite and kind of how certain parts of like the music changed. But there were pieces of her personality there were pieces of her personality that you do begin to see take the forefront in his. And I think that you can even take that back to, you know, like Susanna and all the other people, that there's these these characteristics of the women that he was with that make it into both the music and into what we publicly saw of his personal life.
Mm. Yeah, so that is interesting. So it is sort of reciprocal. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily like like he's the puppet master.
No, I don't think so.
But I mean, like you said, when he's done with somebody, he just, it's like, just discards them and moves on.
Exactly.
to the next person to, you know, kind of. And I mean, that's actually, that's something that a lot of people who worked with him would say, is that there's something almost kind of like, almost like vampiric about him. Like he would, he would kind of like, he would absorb everything that was of use, you know, from you. And then it basically until he could do it better.
Right.
And then he didn't need you anymore.
Oh, true. Yeah. I mean, sad, but true. At least from what I've seen. I mean, and I think it, I hope it doesn't sound terribly negative because I mean it in the nicest way possible. Because I do think that, I just think it's how he got his energy. And I think that he found a way to take all of those things and just make them better.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I'm this, like, I think sometimes I say things on here that, you know, might sound like I'm being overly negative. I mean, obviously I love Prince, you know, and I think for the most part, I don't necessarily think he was a, I don't think he was a bad person, you know, like I'm kind of anti labeling people as purely good or purely bad. You know, I think he was clearly a very flawed person, but I also think that in some ways, I mean, you know, like you said, his talent made almost justified. So it's almost like, could somebody that talented and that sort of gifted, could this person like that even be normal? Could they, could, you know, I don't think it's probably not possible because his brain worked differently, you know, and his, and he had been a rock star since he was, you know, 19, 20 years old. And those are like formative years. And that whole time he's sort of being catered to, you know, I think that's another thing that will really sort of affect your relationships with people. Just being detached from any kind of responsibility for growth.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. I mean, I think, you know, it's I mean, it's just very telling of his. I don't know. I think sometimes some things are somewhat controversial. I know you were saying some things you say, but like I agree. There's some controversial topics, but I do think there's this piece of like that genius insanity, the old adage, like the thin line between genius and insanity. Mm. And I think Prince definitely exhibited that. I mean, when you see truly gifted, creative people, they have a very hard time operating in life in a normal capacity, because I agree. I think his brain just worked differently. Like, and he saw things differently. I think he saw things in music. I think that, you know, I think he just, everything was probably very different than it is for us. And you see that with just extremely intelligent or extremely creative people.
I think also, you know, tying that to the feminist issue, you probably see that more in, you know, extremely gifted men, because there's the combination of their, you know, personality quirks, their kind of like mental or emotional struggles. And then you stack on top of that, you know, like the fact that they're benefiting from a patriarchal society. And it's kind of crazy the proportion of like of male geniuses who are also, you know, assholes. Like,
right, exactly.
Like it's almost like 1-to-1, the ratio, like, and it seems to, the ratio seems lower for women because, and I'm, you know, I'm obviously just like pulling this out of my ass, but my like theory is that women, even women geniuses, have to deal with society a little bit more. Yeah, they can't just, you know, be like, they have to always, it's the double consciousness thing. You know, obviously, I mean, when we talk about Prince was black, so that kind of puts a hole in that theory to an extent. But
yeah,
but I don't know. I do think it's interesting, like how many powerful and talented men have also, you know, done awful things.
Oh yeah, no, I think, yeah, I mean, we could have a whole different podcast on that topic, but I mean, I definitely agree that when you look at women in that context, like, sadly, you know, women will always be viewed in a certain way, no matter what level of society you're at, no matter how intelligent you are, no matter what that looks like. I mean, there's just certain things that people have, just preconceived notions that people have, and I think they're just so deeply rooted in us that you can't overcome those things no matter what you do, no matter how much you try. But I do think that Prince, it's interesting you brought up with Prince being black, because that was obviously one of the topics, and I, unfortunately, because one of the bad things about the conference was that there were a lot of conflicting time slots, so I didn't get to see everything that I wanted to see, which was not good. But that was one of the themes that did come throughout, or did run throughout, I should say. And I find that topic so interesting, because I have such a problem. There's these comments around, like, did Prince transcend blackness? And
right.
It's like, ugh, let's not even have this conversation.
Right.
Can we just ignore this? Because I do think that Prince's rock star persona and his personality and the things that he was willing to do as an artist did put him in a place where people think they should have that conversation. But I do think that overall, I mean, Prince was a black man. Now, he was, the other thing about it, though, is he did reach a level where, you know, you can do these awful things and they can somewhat be ignored. And I don't even think you have to be at Prince level for that to happen. I think that it's easy for people with some amount of talent, which is one of the things I talked a little bit about in the paper as well, is just people with some amount of talent, you do tend to overlook their shortcomings. I mean, we see it with everybody. I think you can look at any celebrity. I mean, heck, look at half of the reality shows on TV right now. These are seriously flawed individuals that we just, like, you know, glorify in society.
Yeah, I mean, even just wanting to be famous, there's like there's a baseline of narcissism there that
yes
is unavoidable. You know, and to be clear, like I don't necessarily, there's also a scale of awfulness, you know, and so like I would never put Prince on the level of like an R. Kelly, you know, and I think that's another thing that to me kind of tempers the, was he a misogynist debate, you know, like I feel like a lot of R. Kelly's like misbehavior seems to stem from just like a basic, you know, like, I don't know about hatred of women necessarily, but like a, contempt for them, or like disrespect, you know. I mean, he genuinely seems to think of women as objects, and Prince, whatever his flaws, you know, and even though he would sometimes toy with those ideas in his art, and even though he would sometimes discard women as if they were objects, I think was, you know, he fundamentally saw women as equals, I think. For most of his life.
And I think, and honestly, I think if you were, I think if he could consider you, I can't talk, sorry. I think if he could consider you his creative equal, it puts you in a completely different category. So right. That was where you got back to the idea of this kind of like vampiric. Is that what you said? Was that, I like that word.
Yeah.
I'm going to steal that. No. But I think it gets back to that idea, because if you look at these women, he did find something special. Like you look at like a Sheila E. I mean, this is someone right. who lifelong contributor with this person, because I think mm-hmm. that in his eyes, she was completely on his level creatively and kept him guessing. She continued to improve herself the same way he continued to improve himself. And I don't think he ever felt like she was somebody that he completely learned everything he could from. So, I mean, I think he had those women where he definitely felt like they were equals. And honestly, I think he was a lover of women. Like I won't go into R. Kelly, cause I think he's just a tortured individual, but and I think there's a whole lot of other stuff going on there.
Right.
But I would say, I mean, I think where the difference lies is I don't necessarily think that Prince, I don't think he has any kind of like disgust or anything for women where he felt like women were inferior. I think that he genuinely loved women. He loved the creativity, but I just think that there was a piece of him, again, going back to kind of the mommy stuff, I think there was a piece of him that just could not connect on a like a lifelong, you know, commitment type of level.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean they could hurt him, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean so much of his music is about being mistreated mm-hmm. by a woman, like especially early on, but really all the way through. Like
yeah, it is.
He's really for somebody who I think doesn't seem to have had problems with like, you know, with women finding him attractive, like
right.
ever. I mean, even when he was a teenager, like maybe he wasn't the, you know, most popular kid in school, but he seemed to have done okay.
Right.
You know, but he's so, he's like, he's always getting his heart broken or like worrying about, like my favorite songs by him are like, It's Gonna Be Lonely, where he's in a relationship, but he's thinking ahead to like, what if we break
over.
Up?
Exactly. It is
really interesting that when you really like look at it song by song, it's like this was a major, and I, you know, part of it is just like the language of pop music. Like, you know, most that's kind of the well of like heartbreak songs is very deep. But I also think that Prince was a more personal songwriter than people tend to give him credit for. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think there's something there with that fixation.
No, I think that's 100% right. I think there's, I just think that the theme of loneliness just runs consistent throughout his music, whether he's talking about romantic relationships or other topics as well. I mean, mm-hmm. even from a disconnect from God that he talks about in some songs, I mean, there's that theme of loneliness and longing that continually goes through all of the music.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I feel like I've said everything that I needed to say.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to make sure we talk about?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it was pretty well-rounded. I mean, I think overall, like I'm really hopeful that, you know, if we don't have the conference again next year. Hopefully there'll be other opportunities. I know that there is a Minneapolis conference coming up. So
yeah,
hoping that that, you know, ends up being something that people can connect at again. I think it was just a great experience. So, I mean, overall, I think for me, it was a fantastic experience personally, professionally, something that I just think that, you know, I'm happy that I got to attend. I hope other people that share this passion get that opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, overall, I would love to just see Prince scholarship become a more recognized thing, because I think that there are so many different facets to this man and his personality, and you could teach college courses on him. So
I
really hope that that's something that continues.
Yeah. I mean, that's really, you know, when I first started writing about Prince and kind of taking on this really sort of big project, mm-hmm. I was wondering, like, is this gonna work? Because, you know, somebody like David Bowie, who
right.
I stole the idea for my blog from another person who wrote about Bowie song by song,
mm-hmm.
but somebody like David Bowie, like, he was so, his music was so intertextual, like he was constantly citing, you know, movies and books and he was, you know, the there's a sense that like Bowie's music is about something else. And I was wondering, I was thinking about it and I was like, am I going to get this same kind of richness with Prince? Because Prince is a much more insular artist. Like he's, mm-hmm. he references his own work, like in a really incredible way, but it's like with Prince, it's not so much it's always just like going deeper and deeper into the same person and the same thing. And I was like, is this just going to be like, you know, solipsism? But the more I get into it, the more I realize like it's about everything, you know. It's about religion,
mm-hmm.
and politics and, you know, race and gender and sexuality. And now I'm like, I don't even know why I was concerned about that, because I think Prince has the richest sort of body of work out of anyone, you know, including Bowie. I can't think of somebody that could inspire, you know, a whole academic like community,
right.
To the degree that I think Prince has the potential to do. So yeah, I'm super excited about seeing what happens in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I think speaking to your point, the community that has sprung up.
Yes.
You know, I realized that before Prince died, there was a community, you know, and that there was always this kind of like you mentioned the, you know, fams versus fans.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that was always part of it. And, you know, they did like celebrations at Paisley Park when he was alive. But I missed all of that. Like I was not active in that community. You know, I was a fan of Prince, but I didn't really get involved to the extent, even to the extent that I'm involved in the community now, until after he died. And so it really has been, it's like, sometimes it's kind of, sometimes it's almost like worrying when I'm like, I probably, like, the people I talk to most consistently are like the people on my Facebook group about Prince, you know. It's a, like the, but it's also like, it's great, you know. I'm so glad that I've been able to connect with those people, and you know, this conference is, I think, a really good example of this, of this idea of just a community kind of emerging around this.
Yes, no, I completely agree. I mean, I think, you know, it was one of those things where, like you, I mean, I had Facebook friends and family friends and different people that I talked about with Prince, but I think that there's mm-hmm. been a whole new door that's been opened with this conference and with meeting people from all over the world that obviously share this passion, that I think has just been really great. And I love being a part of it. So I'm really excited to have the opportunity.
Dreamer.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me. I really appreciate it. It was fun. Is there since you have the microphone, is there any, like, do you want to plug anything? Do you have anything coming out that you want people to know about?
No, I know. I probably have something. The only other thing I have going on, I've been embarking on a travel site. So that's kind of my new thing. I am www.eclecticgirl.com. And that's eclectic with a K. So, E-I-K, no less C. That's been fun. I've been kind of working there. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. So, nothing else to plug.
All right. Well, thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye. And as always, thank you for listening. We are still going with this series for at least the next couple of weeks. I have a few more interviews lined up, a few more people who presented at the conference to share some of their thoughts and some of their ideas that they presented. So if you've been enjoying this, you can check us out on any of the major podcast services, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And of course, you can check out the podcast and the blog at princesongs.org. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, the dream we all dream of.
Oh, please.
Oh, boy. Don't versus girl. In the world, series of love. Love it.
You won't be
a world in a world of
you love.
I've never seen such a pretty girl. Looks so tough,
baby.
You got that look.
That you don't.